Welcome to the Walking on Eggshells with Dr. Tolu podcast. This is the podcast that helps parents and especially those caring for a child with a chronic health condition to balance supporting your child's mental health with maintaining your own emotional health. Hello there. This is Dr. Alugo from St. John Cap, where I empower youth mental health by providing education to parents, teachers, and caregivers. I also empower parents to identify challenges in their children, empower youth by improving their emotional health awareness, and as well as my clinical role as a child psychiatrist. So today I have a very special guest with me. We're going to be providing information, education. She's also a physician. Dr. Anita Luanga is an exercise physiologist. She's a general internist and a geriatrician, as well as an assistant professor of general internal medicine at the University of Saskatchewan here in Canada. She owns her own medical practice and serves patients residing in the Saskatchewan health region. She helps them by to improve their health through diet, exercise, and medication. She can be found on LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and so on. I'm going to share her handles towards the end of our conversation. Dr. Luanga, it's great to have you here today. Thank you so much for taking the time very early in the morning in Saskatchewan to join me today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. So as a child psychiatrist, I regularly have parents bringing their children in saying they're not eating enough. They're not eating enough. They're eating junk food. They're not, you know, so usually it's usually the other end of the spectrum that gets brought to my table. But, you know, I know that there are situations in kids as well as adults where we're eating unhealthy for emotional reasons. And I'm just wondering if you could chat a bit about that, you know. So what is emotional eating?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So emotional eating is basically, at its simplest form, eating for other reasons beyond fueling your body. So examples of doing that would be eating to celebrate, which, you know, is part of our culture, but sometimes that can become problematic. Eating to deal with stress, eating to deal with anxiety, eating to deal with boredom. And I think a lot of us do this subconsciously and we don't really realize we're doing it. And the problem with using food, you know, more than a method of fueling our body, but using it to deal with our emotional issues, is that it can lead to other issues such as, you know, being overweight. I think it's very important to be mindful of eating beyond the reason of fueling our body, figuring out why we're eating, and then also looking at the impacts that it has on our body. And also potentially, especially as parents, on the people around us, because children tend to model what they're taught. Even if it's subconscious, they tend to repeat the behaviors that their parents have.
So do you find that emotional eating is more common in males or females? Is it more common in teenagers? You know, is there a particular gender or age group that it affects more?
That's a great question. I don't think necessarily that it affects one gender more than the other, but I think as women, we might be more aware and more willing to talk about emotional eating, but I think all genders can be affected by it. I think all ages, but primarily as children grow up and, you know, they start to deal with various issues, because unfortunately life is life. We have to deal with life. Even thinking of a family member, I have a young niece and I've watched some behaviors that make me a bit alarmed, but I know it's because she's dealing with anxiety. Sometimes she'll just eat and eat and eat, and she's quite young. So I think it can affect all age ranges.
Do you also find that there are particular food groups that people are reaching out for when they're eating emotionally?
Absolutely. I don't think anyone would overeat or, you know, deal with their emotions by eating a chicken breast. That is very unusual. But you see people reaching for their vice. Say if they like salty and crunchy foods, they'll overeat on chips, overeat the nuts, overeat. My vice is sweet foods. So I love chocolate. You know, it reaches a point where I'm like, enough. But, you know, if I'm dealing with something stressful, I might eat more than I need to eat. So whatever your favorite is, people will eat that mindlessly while watching TV just to have that soothing, comforting feeling.
And so, I mean, is that because those sugary, salty foods, you know, they just hit that spot that brings comfort? Is there a particular physiology or, I don't know, science behind that?
Yes, especially with sweet foods. I think that sweet foods tend to hit the addiction centers in the brain. So you might notice yourself eating more than you need to. And there is a scientific reason. I'm not an expert in that field, to be honest, but there is science backing up the fact that sweet foods especially tend to hit the addiction centers. And before you know it, you think you're addicted to that food. And you probably are, because there's a something going on that's beyond your conscious thought process.
And you just mentioned TV. So, I mean, would you say that a lot of the time emotional eating is happening when we sit down in front of TV or when we're doing Netflix and chilling?
Absolutely, it can happen when we're doing Netflix and chilling, but I can give an example where that doesn't necessarily happen. For example, with my story, this is part of the reason why I'm interested in changing our thoughts and our perspectives on food. I used to work a job at night, and it was quite stressful, and this was during the pandemic. I was commuting across the border. My coworkers were lovely, but I think I internalized a lot of the stress of, seeing patients pass away, having to call their family members, and, in the place that I was at, people were not able to come and visit their family members during the pandemic. So the way I dealt with that stress was by eating. So before I'd go to work, I'd have my Starbucks waiting for me. I'd have like four lattes. I'd have like my banana bread. And then, if I had to have a difficult conversation, I had a treat to deal with it. So you don't necessarily have to be in front of the TV. It could just be, dealing with life stressors, and your way of comforting yourself or unwinding is by eating. Or even after work, you might just be sitting there mindlessly thinking about, or not necessarily mindlessly, but thinking about difficult things that happen. And in order to not feel those emotions or kind of blunt the depth of those feelings, you might eat. Other people out of boredom. You might just sit there and be like, I have nothing to do. I have nothing exciting going on in my life. Scrolling the internet, you see all your friends having fun, and you're like, oh, okay, I'm gonna reach for something. And it's very subconscious. Like, you could, if you really pay attention to what you're doing, you will find yourself going and reaching for something. And then celebrating. Our culture, for sure, uses food to celebrate. We reach a certain milestone, and we're like, we're all gonna go out for dinner. It's okay, but it can become counterproductive if that's always your habit. For example, during med school for me, after every difficult rotation, I'd celebrate by, I think for me, it was buying something, which can also be another problem. But some of my friends celebrate by being like, we're gonna go to this expensive restaurant. This is our treat. And that can really become counterproductive if that's your way of rewarding yourself.
Great. I mean, I really what you said about being, kind of rewarding yourself for stressful situations resonates with me. Like, and after a night on call, I feel like I deserve something sweet and I deserve a treat. If I'm driving back home after midnight, I think, ah, oh, I should just have something to munch. I've worked hard for this, that kind of thinking. I see that pattern. So, as a parent of a teenager, where do you balance that with wanting your teenager to have a healthy relationship with food? Because I commonly see kids who go the other end of the spectrum where they won't even allow a snack to cross their lips. So where is the middle ground with this?
That's a very difficult situation, especially when we're dealing with teenagers. There's a lot of challenges in terms of dealing with body awareness, their body changing. And unfortunately, a lot of young women end up falling into the eating order spectrum, sorry, the eating disorder spectrum, whether they have a full-blown eating disorder or just signs of it. So I think that as a parent, it's very important to talk to your children and not necessarily put pressure on them, because I think trying to insist your children eat certain foods, especially if they're teenagers or preteens, that can become counterproductive, because they're also trying to have their own independence, and you imposing this kind of control over them by telling them you must eat this, you're not eating enough, it's not gonna, help the child. I think a better approach would be to talk to them and, have the space and the room for your child to come and approach you and be honest with you and talk to you about various things. But I think just being there and being open and also providing healthy food in the home is very important. On top of that, your behavior, even though they're becoming teenagers, is also very important. So if you're mindful of what you're putting in your body and you talk about why you're doing what you're doing, if you don't have the knowledge, I would think it would be even useful to get a nutritionist. And if you see that your child is also struggling, maybe say, hey, I'm going to go talk to a nutritionist. Would you like to come along? We can learn about what's healthy, what's not healthy. And if you have that opportunity, and also have those resources and those conversations with your children, over time they will change. But I really don't think putting pressure on your child to eat certain foods is going to be helpful at all.
Exactly. I mean, and just to kind of add to that, so obviously if your teenager is so has a body image dissatisfaction where they feel that they're overweight and therefore they're cutting out food groups, they're restricting, they're skipping meals, and you begin to see a pattern of body checking, significant dietary restriction, weight loss, that's becoming a problem because that has high mortality. So as a parent, you really want to strike that balance to be sure that your child has a healthy relationship, they're eating all food groups, they're eating regularly enough, because the developing brain needs all the food groups at frequent intervals. And, you know, just trying to have a conversation, like Dr. Luanga said, about what's the thinking behind this eating pattern. Do they have a fear of gaining weight? Are they involved in maladaptive behaviors, like making themselves sick after meals and so on and so forth? And then finding the middle ground, you know, in that conversation, that's always very important. So moving on, I'm just wondering, so are there any ways to overcome this emotional eating? What can we do about this?
Yeah, I think first of all, we need to change the way we approach and the way we view food. I think we all need to remember the number one reason we're eating is to fuel our body. And with that in mind, we're more likely to pick foods that are healthy for our body and that are nutrient dense. So what I mean by nutrient dense foods are foods that are closer to their natural form. So I heard somebody say pick foods that fly, that walk, that swim, and that grew that way. You know, food is so perfect the way it is, and then we as humans go and add stuff, remove stuff, and a lot of the stuff we think we're removing has a lot of nutrients. For example, potatoes, we'll remove the skin, and the skin is where the nutrients are. Or, you know, rice, we'll take the husk off of it, and then we have white rice, which, you know, is actually not very nutrient dense. Brown rice is better. So if you can pick something closer to its natural form, that's very useful. Another tip in addition to that is to eat frequent meals and, you know, to have a balance of food when you're eating. So what I mean by having a balance of food is making sure you have foods that are high in fiber. So an example of this would be, say, salad, vegetables, fruits are okay, starches, but closer to their natural form, as I mentioned, sweet potatoes, brown rice. The veggies should be the larger portion of your plate. Then you can add some starch, as I mentioned, brown rice, sweet potatoes, and then always make sure you have protein with the meal. If you're not a vegetarian, chicken breasts, fish, lean sources of protein, lean beef, bison are okay, but maybe not having beef every day. A few, maybe three times per week is okay, but fish and chicken are leaner sources of protein, and the fat, especially on fish, is high in omega-3, and that's a source of fat that is healthier for us. And then in addition to having your fiber or your starches and your protein, you also want to have a healthy fat. And you want to also check the portion size of the healthy fat you're having. So an example of healthy fats are, say, nuts, a fistful, not like three fistfuls. Then, you know, you can end up with other issues if you're overeating on the healthy fats. Avocado is good. Olive oil is good as well. Salad dressing, the specific salad dressing, balsamic vinaigrette, that's the boring salad dressing, but it tends to have healthier fats associated with it if you read the labels. And then the apple cider vinegar in there actually changes the way we absorb carbohydrates. So that would be an example of a meal. And then in terms of frequent meals, and as physicians, you could probably relate to this as a physician. Part of my issue is that I wasn't eating frequent meals. I was probably eating at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, you don't have time to think about, am I eating a balanced meal? You're just going to grab whatever's in the cupboard. Or whenever you're driving home, you're just going to grab whatever you can eat. And it's not necessarily going to be nutrient dense or balanced. But if you're able to have a nice breakfast, and you should probably be eating most of your food early in the morning so that you can burn it throughout the day. So have a nice, well-balanced breakfast. You can have a snack and then have lunch. So as a snack, something that I personally do because I'm fairly busy, I don't have time to sit down, I have like my protein supplement, water, and then for flavor, Crystal Light. So that's not high in calories, but it gives me some protein. So my energy is sustained until lunchtime. Lunchtime, have a decent lunch. You can have another snack. And then dinner time as well, you eat a little bit less because you don't need that energy, but it's also important to make sure you have enough food at the end of the day and you're spreading your nutrients out over the day. So for me, I didn't really give you my whole story in terms of why I eat this way. During that time that I was fairly stressed out, and I think my transition from residency to being an attending, I wanted to become more healthy and I was eating more whole foods, but I gained weight. And I started working out and I continued to gain weight. But my problem was the way I was eating my food. I was eating my food at the end of the day and I wasn't necessarily conscious of what I was eating. So now I actually eat more food. I eat more frequently and I've lost 30 pounds. So that is very counterintuitive because it's like, how can you eat more? But the thing is, I'm eating different foods and I'm fueling my body in a different way and I have more energy. So I think this, some of the stuff I'm saying is quite complex and is, you know, not easily distilled in this conversation. If people are interested in actually knowing how to organize their meals in a way that will also work for their lifestyle, it will be useful to get a hold of a nutritionist and talk to them.
Wow, that's fantastic advice. Thank you for, you know, the way you really laid out the food, you know, the way we should kind of eat mindfully. But I also wanted you to talk about, you know, we mentioned the triggers for emotional eating. So the boredom, the sadness, you know, I think it's important for people to also be able to identify why they're eating when they're eating. Are they eating because they're upset or they're sad? And how, you know, how can they deal with that?
Yeah, I think first of all, you touched on the most important thing, recognizing why you're eating. So I think just starting slowly and thinking, okay, every time I put something in my mouth or I'm about to eat, let me think about what I'm doing. And you'll catch yourself, say at the end of the day after work, you just go straight to the fridge and you grab a beer. You're decompressing. So it's not necessarily to change the behavior right away, but to be aware. And then over time, as you're aware, maybe sit down and say, okay, I'm going to journal about this. And then as you start to journal, you might notice, oh, I didn't really realize this was bothering me. Or you can talk to somebody and they might give you ideas in terms of how to deal with something. But I think awareness is the first step. And then in addition to that, getting help. So in my case, I think I started journaling more and then I realized, oh, okay, this is why my pattern, my habit was the way it was. This was my way of dealing with stress. And I thought it was fairly harmless, but it was not that harmless. And through the process of journaling and figuring out what was going on, I had a lot of epiphanies that have changed my perspective, not just on food, but also on the workplace environment, what I let affect me and what I've decided is no longer going to affect me. So yeah, again, as I mentioned, journaling, talking to other people, and then getting help, whether it's in the form of getting a counselor. There's a lot of online counseling platforms. I think BetterHelp is one of them. I think BetterHelp is also in Canada. That could be a source of, you know, having a counselor or getting more information.
Wow, that's fantastic. So what I hear you saying is being intentional. I think it's really important to sit down and track what's going on. So journaling is helpful to do that. But you have to make the time. You have to make the time, decide to tackle this and take little bites at a time. I mean, when I say bites, I mean little. You'll tackle it a problem at a time and try and figure out where is this coming from and what can I handle. And for parents, if you're thinking, okay, so this is not about me, but about my child, similarly, you can try and figure out with them what's going on, what's fueling this emotional eating. And if it's become a pattern or a crutch that they're using to deal with, you know, stress or boredom, then providing alternative ways of, you know, relieving stress. So if they're anxious, how could they reduce their anxiety? If they're bored, what can they do to keep them occupied and busy? Could they have healthier options instead? And finding a balance. I think those are important things to really think about. Another thing I wanted to say was, we all, you know, like a balance is important. So I don't want you to think, to go away from this discussion saying, oh, I'm never going to have a snack. Oh, I'm not allowed a snack. No, eating is a social thing. We're social beings. So eating out with friends, having a snack, we're getting to the summertime. But, you know, just being mindful as to why am I having the snack? Is this fueling my body? Am I overeating? Is this meeting a different need that I really needed to meet? And could I be doing something different? Is this harming me ultimately? I think those are the things to think about as we, eat and do all our social business. So, Dr. Anita Luanga, where can we find you? Where can we find you?
Well, on LinkedIn, Anita Luanga. On Twitter, I think it's Luanga MD. On TikTok, it's Dr. All small letters, Dr. Luanga. On YouTube, Dr. Luanga. So I'm a general internist. I'm not necessarily a psychiatrist or a counselor or a nutritionist, but I'm just speaking from my personal experience. And if people want to follow me, they can follow me on any of these platforms.
Please go follow Dr. Luanga. She has a lot of health information that, you know, just distilled down to be very practical. Like we always say, any information on this platform doesn't replace medical advice by your practitioner. This is just mental health information to kind of help you along your way and help you figure out when to get help. So keep following us on St. John Cap on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Share this information with your network. And remember, information is the first step in actually improving your emotional and mental health. So before I let you go, Dr. Luanga, do you have any last words for my audience?
No, I just want to thank you for having me on your platform. I really enjoyed having this time to talk with you, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. I have learned a lot. I am going to be more intentional about my eating sweets after my uncles and work towards just being healthy generally. Thank you very much. It's been great having you here.
Thank you.
Bye everyone. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Looking forward to having you join me on the next episode. Till then, don't forget to share this with your friends and neighbors and to follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, where I am known as St. John Cap. That is St. John Cap with a double P. See you soon.